Hi, welcome to another episode of We Used to Be Best Friends. I am your host, Sabrina. This is actually not a new episode. This is a continuation episode, part three of me sharing my story of how I went through a very toxic friendship with a covert narcissistic ex-best friend. So if you haven't yet, please check out part one and then part two. And when you're done with that, I will meet you right back here. Not only is the job situation in jeopardy, not only has she brainwashed my roommate against me and told him a bunch of lies, and now he's no longer talking to me and I've like lost a friendship with him and the roommate situation is awkward. And not only has she tried to ruin the whole Tiffany situation with the bracelet, and then on top of that, my birthday, this whole thing was to get me to dump Nate and not be with Nate. Nope. And on top of that, she just needs to escalate it further. So going to other people like Cash and other friends and talking about my personal relationship and talking badly about me behind my back and trying to discredit my relationship and make it look horrible and trying to kind of force me and bully me into breaking up my boyfriend, that's not enough. No, let's start creating an accusatory lie on top of that. This is when she starts telling my roommate and other people that Nate is harassing her when Nate is not doing diddly squat. I'm just sitting here like, are you gonna throw at me? What else are you gonna throw at me? She starts roping Cash in and telling Cash that Nate is harassing her when Nate was never harassing her. And I specifically remember a moment where she used that language. It kind of like, it's those moments where things click and the pieces of the puzzle like kind of fit together. There was a day that we were all working together, and I remember that Nate was going to go in to have his lesson with his client, and me and her were going to go somewhere. I don't know whether we're going to go to lunch or whatever it was. We're supposed to leave. So she's standing right next to me or a little bit behind me. And I remember looking at Nate, him looking at me, he's smiling at me, waving, and then walks away with his client and continues about his day, right? I remember turning around, looking at her, and her face completely livid, angry. I didn't understand what just happened, why she just had a complete mood change. And she looks at me and starts under her breath with that rage again. I thought I told you to tell him not to look at me, not to smile at me, not to even wave at me. I am so sick and tired of the harassment. I remember in that moment, completely frozen again, locked. My limbs are locked. I don't understand what's going on. I'm racking my brain and my head is spinning 1,000 miles per hour. I'm asking myself, did I not just see what just happened? Like, did Nate just look, didn't he just look at me, smile and wave and walk away? Because, you know, he's my boyfriend. He's the one looking at me. Am I absolutely nuts? Am I crazy? Is this what is happening? Like, I'm asking myself all of these questions all at once, racking my brain, trying to figure out, like, how can she misinterpret that entire experience to think that he's looking at her, to think that he's smiling and waving at her? Like, in my head, I'm like, am I the one that's crazy? Am I the one that's crazy? Or is she the one completely delusional? That she sees the reality that she sees. Like, what? Am I absolutely nuts? Did I not just see him smile, wave at me, and then walk away? Like, why does she assume and think that it's him? And then on top of that, to throw the word harassment as if it's like some sort of candy you can throw at anyone. This is not funny. Like, this is not funny. And that is when all of the pieces of the puzzle kind of just melts together, and I start to understand a lot of things that have happened in the past.
This was not the first time that she accused men of harassment or anything to that sort. She's probably told me about 5 to 6 other instances, but I'm not the type of person who's not gonna believe you. Like, how can you not believe your friend? How do you get to a point where you think to yourself, oh, your friend is lying about this? Like, this is one of those subjects that this is not funny. Like, this is not a joke. You don't make this stuff up. You don't lie about this stuff. Like, this is not funny. What I find kind of ironic right now is while I'm recording this, this whole Blake Lively situation is happening with Justin Baldoni and how she's accusing him of sexual harassment. And you remember how I said I'm going to name her Serena because she reminds me of Serena Vanderwoodson? Like, what are the odds? But I feel like that is exactly what I was going through. It was one of those situations where it was a girl that I hope to God she wasn't lying about those other 5 or 6 situations. But I know for a fact she was lying about Nate's. I don't know if she was lying about Bentley. I wish I could talk to Bentley to figure that out. I wish I could talk to his sister to figure that out. But I don't have their information. I don't know anything of that, so I can't really fact check that situation. While all of this is happening, I'm also in this like mindset where I'm angry and I'm livid because she's creating a fake narrative. She's basically creating a lie to bring in other people and to you know, it's like quick. As soon as someone says sexual harassment or like harassment of any sort, like you don't question that. So it's that, you know, that immediate believe all women situation that, of course, I understand as soon as you throw that word that like the guy in question is going to be scrutinized. And I'm standing there being like, this is insanity because he didn't do anything and you're screaming wolf and lying about something that. Like, why would you do that? It still doesn't make sense to me. Like, why would you lie? Why would you go so far to lie like that to try to ruin someone? Like, what is the point? What is the purpose? What do you get out of that? It's not normal and it's not okay. And I'm also in this mindset where it's like, you know what? Forget about me. Like, you can tell anybody that I'm like dumb and I'm blind in love and you can like create this whole narrative that you think that I'm in a toxic relationship and you think that I'm stupid. You can say whatever you want about me. You can create whatever lie and talk whatever you want about me. I know who I am and I can take care of myself. But if you lie to other people about somebody that I care about somebody that I love, and you're out here lying through your teeth about somebody that I care about, now that's when I start standing up and I start getting very like on top of things. Because you, again, forget me. You can say whatever you want about me. I can take care of myself. I'm a strong girl. I'll figure it out. I'll heal. It doesn't matter. I don't care how people view me, and if they want to ruin my reputation, I don't care. But when it comes to people in my life that I care about and that I know did not do anything and are being accused of things that they did not do, that's it. That's it. So at this point, Serena has escalated her smear campaign to try to ruin Nate's reputation by creating this accusatory lie about him and saying that he's doing that to her when he didn't do anything. And this is when she ropes in Cash and uses the triangulation method to like kind of get him to do her bidding, honestly. And he's the one who starts getting more and more irritated with me and angry with me visibly because, you know, I'm inviting a guy over that supposedly, according to him and according to her, harassed her. So like, I kind of get his point of view. I get Cash's point of view. He's protecting his girl, the girl he likes. He's being like a guy. He's being like very overly protective. And here comes like his roommate, me,
who's bringing a guy who's like making his girl feel uncomfortable and feel whole. So like, I get how he's behaving. I don't blame him for any of that. Do I think he should have had a conversation with me and a conversation with Nate and like talked these things through before like jumping the gun and believing a pathological liar? Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? Again, I don't blame him for this, because if you've experienced a narcissistic person, especially a covert narcissist, they are masterminds with manipulation, will make you believe anything. They're so good at what they do. And I don't understand how they do it. I don't understand how they have the mental gymnastics to like literally coerce someone into believing these outrageous lies. But they do that, and they're incredible at it, to be honest. So before a lot of this started happening, before she started doing the triangulation and the accusatory lies about Nate, before that, it was always Cash, me, and her hanging out like we were the three amigos, right? We're always hanging out together. And then sooner or later, we ended up having one conversation where all of us were hanging out. And I will never forget this conversation, because it was literally the catalyst to everything, like kind of just like spiraling too. At first, she tells me she's not interested in him. He's not her type. And then there was this one day we're all sitting down, we're like hanging out, eating, and he brings up his mom, and he brings up his mom being on a private airplane, just coming back from vacation because of the guy that she's dating. And that's when Cash kind of starts telling us about who his mom is dating. And he's apparently like super wealthy, owns a bunch of hospitals around New York City. So he kind of like starts telling us about that. And that was the moment, like literally after that, suddenly Serena wanted to be his girlfriend. Like before that, she was telling me over and over and over again how she's not interested in him. She doesn't think he's cute. She's like, because I knew he had a crush on her. I didn't want the whole situation to be awkward. Like she would always go into his room and like cuddle and like whatever, but they were not really dating. They weren't boyfriend, girlfriend. At least that's what I was being told. I don't know. But yeah, as soon as that happened, then suddenly it was no longer Sabrina allowed to go to our like three amigos excursions. Nope. Instead, she would come up to me and basically uninvite me. Like we would all have plans for us three of us to like do things together. And she would come up to me and be like, so it's actually date night. So it's just going to be Cash and I, you understand, right? And then I slowly was like uninvited from hanging out with Cash. And I just felt like it was like purposely trying to isolate me from him so that she can continue to like start the lies and continue to spread the lies with him. Because if him and I were on speaking terms, and if him and I were talking all the time, like he would have asked me, he would have asked my point of view, but she needed to isolate him from me so that he wouldn't talk to me about my side of the story. So he wouldn't figure out what's actually happening in the truth. I don't know what other word to use when it comes to these covert narcissists except the word devious. They are so devious. They know how to do things in such a strategic manner that it's like behind the back and so sly and secretive that they can always like get away with it, where like it's always like, oh no, you're reading too far into it, when you know exactly what they're doing. So devious. And at first, I didn't want to believe it. At first, I was like, Sabrina, you're overthinking this. She's not trying to isolate you on purpose from him. Like, they're not ignoring you on purpose. Like, they're not doing any of this stuff. Because remember, at this point, I have lost my job. I've been isolated from Cash. He's no longer talking to me. We're no longer talking to each other. He's like basically ignoring me because of the harassment stuff that Serena has lied to him about. And to add on top of that, she's not allowing me to hang out with anyone anymore, with us. The three amigos doesn't exist anymore. And on top of that, she is now giving me the silent treatment. So every time she walks in through the door from work, she is completely ignoring me. Completely ignore me as if I do not exist anymore. And doesn't answer text messages. We went from being best friends to like her completely pretending I don't even exist in the apartment. This was probably one of the worst experiences. These moments were the worst experience ever because I just felt completely alone. I felt completely alone. I felt like I was completely by myself. I felt like she was ganging up on me and bringing people in and creating these lies and making it sound and feel like it's all my fault, as if I'm doing all of these horrible things when all she's doing is just lying about it. And then on top of that, not only is she treating me poorly, but now my roommate is no longer talking to me. And I don't understand what's going on because no one's talking to me directly. And then on top of that, it feels like I am becoming paranoid in my own head because I'm like trying to tell myself, convince myself this is happening. But I'm not sure if it is. So in my head, I'm like, are they truly ignoring me? Are they truly isolating me? Are they truly like pretending to like not be my friend? And the first instant that I like thought this was, there was an old friend that came by. Do you remember that group that I told you that were her neighborhood friends that we like, I told, I don't want to hang out with them anymore. She hung out with them a lot. So one of the boys from that neighborhood came to New York. So he knew me. We used to all like hang out. We used to all be friends, right? And this was also during like COVID was opening up, but they had a bunch of rules. So one of the restaurant rules was like everything closes down at 10 p.m. Like no food is being served after 10 p.m. So it was like all of these weird rules and curfew stuff. So when he came to New York, she ended up telling me and she's like, oh, he's here. Mike is here. Oh my God. And she tells me he wants to see all of us. Like he wants to see you. He wants to see me. He wants us to all like grab food and hang out. And I was like, oh yeah, definitely. I'd love to do that. So she proceeds to tell me, okay, that's fine. I have date night with Cash. So you get ready and I will text you when we're heading over there. So I was like, okay, perfect. That sounds like a plan. So I do exactly that. They go on their little date. I'm in the apartment. I'm like, open a bottle of wine, pouring myself a glass, like enjoying myself, doing my hair, doing my makeup, putting my clothes on, and I'm waiting for her to text me. So I'm waiting, I'm drinking my glass of wine, my second glass of wine, and I start to realize that it's like 9:30, and I'm just like, okay, well, everything closes down at 10, like, and it's gonna take me a little while to get there. I don't even know where they're at. I was like, why hasn't she texted me yet? So I end up being the one to call and text her, and I don't hear back from her until 9:40, maybe 9:45, something like that. I don't hear back from her, and she's just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. We got here about half an hour ago, totally forgot, but you know, you can still come if you want. And it's just one of those things where I was like, it is 9:45. By the time I get there, they might not even let me in because everything closes at 10. So what's the point of me going there? And it just brought me back to like my childhood, my friendship with her during the childhood, where she did this to me on multiple occasions. And it just felt like it was repeating itself. Everything, the cycle was repeating itself. And I just got to a point where I was just like, this is ridiculous. And on top of that, not only was I annoyed by her not messaging me, but Cash was my friend. And why did he not text me? Why did he not let me know? He's usually the most responsible one out of all of us. He's the one who always has everything together. He's the one that always has the plans. So I was also shocked that he didn't let me know, unless she said something behind my back to him that I don't know about. But again, I can't really know this information because Cash has been isolated from me and he's no longer talking to me. And then on top of that, I don't know if that's actually true because I'm like starting to get like frustrated and I am doubting myself. I'm gaslighting my experience. I'm also feeling like paranoid with the whole situation because I have gone up to her a few times and I've asked her if everything's okay because she's been ignoring me. He's been ignoring me. No one's been talking to me. And she has said on multiple occasions, yeah, everything's fine. I'm just giving you your space because you're going through a lot. So it's just all of these mixed messages that I don't understand what's going on. So I decided to test it out. I'm a Virgo and I don't like not knowing, having concise, clear information. So there was one day where I was like, you know what? I'm gonna test this out. I'm gonna see if they're actually ignoring me because the whole time I am in the apartment, usually they're out in the living room. Usually they both like have conversations with me. Usually like they're cooking in the kitchen. But every time I am home, they're just hiding in the room and they're never coming out to say hi. They don't even acknowledge my existence. It's just the worst experience ever. So I'm sitting there like, am I making this up? Maybe they're just enjoying their time together. Like, are they purposely ignoring me or not? So one day I decide to pretend that I'm leaving the apartment. So I make it as loud as possible, my footsteps, everything, that I'm walking out the door. Baff, baff, baff with my feet all the way, slam the door closed. But then I tiptoe very quietly back into the room and close the door behind me. And then I remember grabbing a pillow and sitting at the corner of my room on the floor so that they can't see me from the windows if they go on the balcony. And even if they open the door, they won't see me, right? And I sit there in my room and I just wait. I wait to see if I'm correct. If I'm correct, they're going to leave that room and they're going to be hanging out in the living room like they usually do if they're actually avoiding me. But if I'm not correct, they're just going to stay in that room and watch their show or do whatever. Literally 3 minutes later, I hear the door open. I hear her say, "Did she leave?" And I hear him say, "Yeah, I think so." While I sit there in the corner hearing all of this. And then proceed to listen to them laughing and giggling for the next 3 hours in the living room while I am sitting on the floor with a pillow in my face, crying into the pillow, hoping that nobody is going to hear me. It's one thing talking about this and telling you guys about what happened. It is another thing actually experiencing it in real time. And even the strongest person cannot experience or be that strong in these moments. And I remember after a few hours when all of that like left and they left the apartment or they went back into their room or something. And I pretended to come back into the apartment like later that night. I drew a bath and trigger warning here. But I drew a bath and I just remember laying my head in the water and submerging myself and wishing that it would all go away. That everything that I'm experiencing would just stop and it would be fine and it would be okay if I just kept my head there. And I didn't do any of that. I was just thinking about it and I had that split moment where I thought about it and I thought that this would be nice if it would all just go away. So when people tell you that covert narcissistic abuse is one of those things where it is 1,000 knives being stabbed into your back, back to back to back to back, it is 100% true. Because if you are not exhausted already listening to this story, as much as I'm exhausted telling it, imagine what it felt like living it. Because I am tired and there is enough that one person can manage. And I've gone through hell and back. I've gone through many, many traumas in my life. But this was an ongoing one. And the thing about it was so sly. And it was so malicious. And it was so slow. It was like drowning in a pool of mud, of blood. I don't know, but it was drowning into this thick pool. And every time the person pulls you up for a breath of air just to push your head back down. But then when you're trying to tell people that they're the ones pushing your head back down, instead, they're the ones telling everybody how they're saving you instead, and they're pulling your head up and showing everybody, see, I'm trying to help them from drowning. While when everyone turns their back, they're the ones who are pushing you right back down. It is the worst experience ever, and is not something I would ever wish on anybody. But it's one of these stories that I knew I had to talk about it one day. I knew I had to tell it because I'm sure there's a lot of us out there that are experiencing these types of people, and it's not just in our friends, it's in our romantic relationships, and it's in our families. And these people don't have a voice that I do, because I'm not letting people like to hear it, hears it. I don't care anymore. Owe anybody my silence. I don't owe anybody my kindness. I've done enough of that, and it got me nowhere. So this time, in this life, I'm choosing me, and I'm standing up for me and anyone that needs to hear it. At this point in this whole experience, I'm trying my best to not be in the apartment as much as possible. I'm telling myself all I need to do is just make it through the lease, and I will be free. All I need to do is make it through the lease. I knew in my heart of hearts that me and her were never going to be friends after this. I knew in my heart of hearts that the moment I leave this apartment, the moment that door closes, she will never see my face again. I will never speak to her again, because no one deserves to be treated the way that she treated me. So during this whole situation, I don't have a job, but I'm actively looking for a job. And because I didn't sign the contract, my dad is helping me in the meantime. He is sending me money to make sure that I pay my rent on time and utilities and everything on time. And I never faltered. I paid everything on time, sometimes even earlier. And I also made sure to communicate that with Cash. I told them that if there's ever an issue where I might see that I might not be able to pay for the rent, I will let you know. But that never had to be brought up, because that never happened. There was never an issue. I always paid every single month on time. So let me reiterate and paint out what is happening right now in this roommate situation, this living situation. I've lost my job. My best friend is ignoring me. She's not talking to me. She's pretending I don't exist. She's walking past my door as if I am a ghost, giving me the silent treatment. And then anytime I confront her on it, she pretends that nothing is happening, even though she knows very well how she's treating me. Ignoring text messages, not really caring, not asking about me, nothing. On top of that, she's no longer talking to me. He's ignoring me completely. We no longer like talk or communicate with each other at all. Because of the whole harassment lies that Serena has created, Cash now doesn't want any boyfriends in the apartment anymore, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous, because I'm like, aren't you living together? Aren't you a couple? Like, why is this rules on me but not rules on you? But again, even Nate was feeling very, very uncomfortable being there because of how they were behaving. Every time Nate came over and I told them, hey, Nate is coming up, they would scurry into their rooms like New York City rats, like just scurry. And he'd come in to like basically an empty living room and ask me, hey, are they going to come outside and say hi? Like, I definitely want to say hi to them. And I had to like come up with some excuse to be like, oh, no, they're busy doing something in their room. Even though when I think about it now, I was just like, that is the most immature behavior ever. It's just ridiculous. So Nate started to feel more and more uncomfortable being there. And I completely get it. Like he was being treated like he's some sort of intruder when he's not. And it's just them being absolutely immature and not treating people with respect. So one day, Serena walks into my room. Remember, I haven't talked to her at this point in months. She hasn't asked about me. She doesn't know anything about my life. I haven't talked to her. Like, we're on the outs. She comes in with this little piece of paper in her hand, And I already knew immediately what that piece of paper was because I've seen Cash like write down his like finances the same type of way. So I knew what was going on. And previously to that, a few months ago, right when I lost my job, she just handed me a contact to another facility in the Hamptons, like pretending to be my friend, be like, here you go. I'll give you this contact for the Hamptons, even though she was lying to me the whole time about signing the contract. But here you go. I'm being nice. Like, okay, I saw right through that. But I kept that Hamptons contact in my back pocket just for emergencies in case I did not find a job at all. So she walks into my room with this like huge smile on her face, like ready to talk to me about this paper that she has in her hand. And I knew immediately what she was trying to do. I knew immediately she was trying to sell me on the job in the Hamptons. And here, I get it. Like, if we were talking, if we were good friends and she was trying to like convince me, hey, this is a good opportunity, all this stuff. Yeah, it's great. But after everything that has happened, I am starting to see right through her tactics. And I'm starting to see that this is not pure intentioned. She immediately comes in, tries to talk to me about it. I shut it down quickly. And I'm like, hey, if you're going to try to sell me on the Hamptons, it's not going to happen. I set my boundary right there, but she gets irritated and annoyed and goes, just listen to me. So I give her the space to sell me on the Hamptons, even though I'm absolutely livid at this point because this girl, I haven't talked to her in months. She comes in to try to sell me on something that she doesn't even ask if I want or if I'm looking for that. She doesn't ask me if I have a job. She doesn't ask me how I'm doing. She has no concern for me whatsoever. She's just so dead set that I have to listen to her. She's entitled to the thought that I have to sit there and listen to her sell me on a job without actually asking me about how I'm doing or if I even want this job in the first place. So then she starts to proceed to try to sell me on the job with that piece of paper in her hand, which I honestly think is the most disrespectful thing for someone to do, is to literally, that piece of paper had all of my potential finances, had how much I would make per day with how many hours I would work at that club if I got that job, how much I would spend on food if I got the job over there, how much I would spend on rent or room rent over there if I got the job in the Hamptons, how much I would spend on like Ubers getting to and from work, how much I would spend on the jitney, like going from Hamptons back to New York to see my friends and family, or not family, well, to see, well, Nate at this point is family and his family is my family. So yeah, friends and family. And then on top of that, it was also written down that piece of paper, the amount that I owe for my room rent in Manhattan. And the utilities too, that is going to come out of all of that. And then how much I would have left over, which I thought was hilarious because their math was really off because they don't know what taxes are. But again, I let her go on her little tangent, even though I thought it was absolutely uncalled for, absolutely unnecessary, absolutely disrespectful, and none of their freaking business to tie in my finances to what they're doing. And when I did call them out on that, when I did call her out on that, they were saying things like, oh, well, you lost your job and we're trying to make sure that you're paying rent and all that stuff. And I was like, I was paying rent every single month. I never faltered. And I said, if anything were to change, that I will let you know. Nothing changed. I paid my rent to the last day of the lease. So the whole, oh, I'm trying to help you. First, again, you're inserting yourself into something that has nothing to do with you. Secondly, stop trying to help people that never asked for your help. Like that is what pissed me off. It's the entitlement that people think it's okay to behave that way and to put your nose into other people's finances and business without even asking them for their consent. That is what bothered me. And that is what kept happening when it came to those two. When she was finally done with her little spiel of trying to sell me on the Hamptons, I politely declined and told her, no, I'm not interested. That's when she got up, irritated and angry with me, and huffed and puffed out of my room and straight into Cash's room, closing the door. Again, I found this to be completely disrespectful, absolutely uncalled for. This is overstepping boundaries where it has nothing to do with you. My finances and my situation has nothing to do with you. And if I wanted to incorporate you into that, I would have incorporated you into that. But the fact that both of them were overstepping my boundary without even having communication with me, without even asking me if it's okay or having my consent in this, and then feeling entitled to having to sell me on this job when they didn't even ask how I feel about it or if I want it in the first place, and then having the audacity to be butthurt and annoyed afterwards when I decline on something that I never wanted in the first place, didn't ask for in the first place, and I didn't want their unsolicited advice in the first place. Like, all of that is just absolutely mind-blowing to me. Absolutely mind-blowing. And when she left the room, I really sat back and I thought to myself, what was the intention of this? Because it wasn't to help me. It wasn't to help me. What was the intention of this? And I thought to myself, what were the benefits if I was working in the Hamptons? If I was not in the apartment, what are the benefits? Benefit number one, I'd still be paying for my portion of the room without even being there. Benefit number two, I wouldn't be there, so they would have the entire apartment to themselves. Benefit number three, my boyfriend wouldn't have to come over. So they have three things that are great, and they have the entire apartment to themselves in the middle of New York City. So yeah, I think it had a lot to do with what they benefited out of it. And I started to finally realize in that moment that not only was my best friend trying to sabotage my relationship with my boyfriend and did hella try to do that, and then sabotage the whole job situation by egging me on, and then sabotage my room and apartment situation with my roommates, and then sabotage the apartment so that I would leave and she could have all of it to herself. It was like this girl was little by little trying to take everything from me. And it was absolutely insanity. At this point, like I said, I was trying my best not to be in the apartment as much as possible and trying my best to hang out with my boyfriend. He was also helping me like get some money here and there by like helping with like clients or helping his mom like clean up some stuff. So she was like paying me here and there. So he was helping me make some like little cash on the side. The apartment situation was like added to all everything that was happening, just like an added little cherry on top, right? So I remember coming back from one of the days I was spending, or one of the weekends I was spending with my boyfriend, and I come back and I knew that weekend they were going to be out, right? And they're going to be traveling to Florida for, I guess, holidays or whatever it was at that time. And I come back to the apartment being absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. In absolute shambles. Like, wow, you'd be, oh my God. The kitchen. I walk in and it smells horrific. Like, I was about to gag. It was so disgusting, the smell. I walk in. They didn't take out the garbage, even though they knew that they were going to be gone for over a week. For over a week. What if I didn't come over that week? What if I didn't show up to the apartment? Nobody told me about how horrific it is in there. Nobody did. Oh my God. And the garbage was not taken out. It smelled so bad. Oh my God. I can't even think about it. It smelled so, so bad. And then there was rotting onions in a bag next to the trash can. There was this pan that she would use to make eggs on it, but it was not washed or cleaned. So it was like the remnants of like rotting egg on top of the pan, on top of the stove, just sitting there. There was like flies, like those fruit flies roaming around on some of like the fruits, like the bananas that were left. There was all of the dishes were left in the sink, and the water was accumulating in the sink to the point where the water was like murky brown. That's how long that has been sitting in the sink. And let me preface, a lot of the stuff that is in the kitchen was my stuff. A lot of the stuff that they were using were my pots and pans, my cooking utensils, my cutting boards, my knives, like a lot of things were mine. And my God, it was just so gross. I opened the fridge. There are a few rotting things in the fridge. The milk. Oh my God. I grabbed the milk and it has expired to the point where it is not liquid anymore. There's no sloshing in there. Like you try to shake it, it is a brick. It is a brick of milk. It is cheese at this point. Not even butter, cheese. All of that was left. For who? Who's going to clean that up? The maid that you guys hired? Me. Because when I come home, I have to live in that. I use the kitchen. They know how often I use the kitchen. Everything was just left disgusting. And this is not the first time that this has happened. This is not the first time that this has happened. This is like the last time that this is going to happen. That's for sure. It just was absolutely ridiculous. And there was a lot of like little things that happened throughout too. That was just a lot of like overstepping my boundary and disrespecting my boundary, like especially with kitchen stuff. Like for example, I had this mixing bowl that, and I love to bake. I love to bake cookies. I love to make like desserts. So I had this metal mixing bowl, and there was a few times where I was wondering why there was always dog hair in the mixing bowl. And like, I find that disgusting. Like my biggest pet peeve is I don't like having animals in the kitchen because I just don't know where they've been. Like, I don't know if they have fleas. I don't know if that flea is going to fly somewhere in the food. Like their hair flies everywhere. I don't want hair in my food. Like if I have a pet, they're not going to be in the kitchen. They're going to be outside of the kitchen, but never around the kitchen stuff. I personally don't like that. That's my own personal boundary. So I find like the dog's hair in the bowl. And the whole time I'm like, where is this coming from? What is going on? And then one day I see her grabbing my mixing bowl and grabbing the dog and being like, come on, let's go take a bath. And I'm literally twitching, my eyes twitching. I'm like, are you for real? Like, grab one of the buckets that we have to clean. Like, not my mixing bowl. Like, what are you doing? So I tell her, I was like, can you please not do that? Like, that is disgusting. I don't want you to use my mixing bowl to wash the dog. Like, I cook with that. I make cookies with that. Like, are you kidding me? So she's like, yeah, I won't do that. And I'm pretty sure she's done that a few times because ever since then, I still found hairs in my mixing bowl, even though I've washed it 3,000 times. And on top of that, I placed it in a specific place. I'm a Virgo. Like, I know what I'm doing. I place it in a specific place for it to be like moved later on. So I know she's using it. And that day there's no cookies. So like, I know she's using it for other things, not baking. And then on top of that, also my spatula was my favorite spatula. I don't know why it's my favorite. It just had like this little smiley face on it. It was probably like the cheapest thing that I got out of Walmart, but it was like one of my favorite spatulas. And she would let the dog lick the spatula all the time to the point where there's dog bite marks all over the spatula and there's holes in my spatula and it's just a ruined spatula. And it's like these, all these stupid little things that are just so stupid, but again, they're like 1,000,000,000 little knives that just stab you in the back over and over again. They're like little things that they do to overstep your boundary, to disrespect you some way, somehow, to like not care about how you feel. Every time I tell her not to do a certain thing, she doesn't care and she does it anyway. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous. And I remember that day, I just washed all my dishes, all my stuff, and I cleaned it and I put it all in boxes and put it all in my room. And I was like, that's it. You guys are not having the privilege to use any of my stuff in the kitchen anymore. You have lost that privilege. I'm done. And it was like from the coffee maker to everything. I took everything, not one thing. I was like, that's it. You guys can fend for yourself. Like, and I don't care if they thought that was petty or immature. I don't care. They disrespected my things and they think that they have the entitlement to use my stuff and to leave the kitchen in such a destructive mess like that. Absolutely not. And I know that this is not Cash, because when I lived with Cash, he was a clean guy. Every Tuesday, I think, was his day to clean up or something like that. And he cleaned up very, very well. He's a very, very like meticulous person. And I know it was her because she used to tell me things like how Bentley would complain about her, saying that she just leaves a mess everywhere and she's terrible at cleaning. And when she first told me that, I was like, that's a horrible thing for him to say. But now, experiencing it, I am on the exact same page as Bentley. She doesn't know how to clean. She's a horrible cleaner. And honestly, I think she does it on purpose. Like, there's no way that was not, like, that extreme. There's no way that is normal. Because I saw how she grew up with her parents or her mom. Like, everything was clean. Like, everything was in its place. There was always like order. Yeah, it's just, no, I don't like, I think that this was done on purpose and she was probably doing the same thing to Bentley on purpose as like a form of retaliation or something. Like, it's just ridiculous. So after I grabbed all my stuff, I think that was like maybe 3 months before we were completely like gonna end the lease, completely done. And I just remember, I think 2 months before or something like that, I wrote a letter to her. And I really wish I would have taken pictures of this letter. I really, really wish I would have taken pictures of this letter, but unfortunately, I did not. This letter was basically my way of just kind of ending the friendship with her in the nicest way possible. Like, before that, I tried to have multiple conversations with her, and she knew that I was trying to have a conversation with her because she also came up to me and she's like, yeah, we need to have a conversation. I was like, yes, we need to have a conversation. I'm literally 5 steps away from your door. You can come knock on my door. My door is always open. Whenever you're ready, we can have a conversation. And that conversation never happened. Dodged me all the time. She ignored my text messages. She knew I wanted to have a conversation. And, you know, I just wanted to hear her side of the story. I wanted her to take a little bit of accountability for how she was treating me. I wanted to share my side of the story, hear her side of the story. I knew in those moments, like, we weren't really going to be friends, but I thought to myself, like, I don't want to end it like this. At least like having an understanding of each other's sides so that we can like move on respectfully and cordially, and like you can go on with your life and I can go on with my life, and that's it. That's all there needs to be. I knew I wasn't going to be friends with her after that because I was done. I was absolutely done. But I wrote the letter, and I remember writing in the letter, like, I didn't blame her for anything. Kind of said things like, you know, when you were with Bentley, you treated me in this way, like gave examples. And I started noticing that it's happening the same exact way with Cash. And I said something like, I don't blame you for any of that. I blame myself for allowing it. I allowed you to continue to treat me like that for years on years, and I didn't set enough, like, I don't think I used the word boundaries then. I don't think I knew the word boundaries, but like I didn't stand up for myself. I didn't say anything. I just allowed you to continue to treat me that way without having a conversation with you. And then basically just saying like, this is another behavior pattern where I'm noticing you're doing the exact same thing with Cash. And I remember saying in the letter that I blamed Bentley for a lot of it, but I'm starting to notice that it's not entirely Bentley's fault and that you are still treating me the same way as you did with Bentley. But this time it's a different face, and it's Cash's face. And I know Cash, and I've like been friends with Cash, and I know it's not Cash's fault. So like, I kind of was saying how she continued in this behavioral pattern for years and treated me not the best for years, and that I allowed it to happen. I didn't put a stop to it. I didn't set my boundaries. I didn't. And I should have. I really wish I had a copy of that letter. I left the letter on the fridge. I hung it on the fridge, and I think she read it. She read it because the reason why I think she read it is because Cash reached out to me and said that I need to apologize to her because the letter was apparently like super mean, which I don't think the letter was super mean. I think it was very honest and very straightforward, but I rewrote that letter so many times because I wanted to make sure that it put my point across, but it was still kind and still respectful, but it made sure to say what I needed to say without being a full-blown jerk. Like, I could easily just write a letter and be like, fuck you, Serena, and that will be the end of it. But I wrote it in the best way I possibly can to express myself and make it direct, but make it kind and respectful as well. So if she took that badly, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like she could have just had a conversation with me and told me that. And like, I even wrote in the letter, I remember I put in like an olive branch thing where I was like a door is always open for you if you want to talk this out, if you want to like share your side of the story. Like, I know I put an olive branch part in that letter. God, I wish I took a screenshot of it. I wish I took a picture of it, to be honest, but it's nowhere to be found. I looked through all my pictures and I can't find it. Yeah, so I basically ended that friendship with that letter as best as I possibly could. And then I told myself I'm just going to bide my time until the lease is over. And then on the day that we were moving out, the lease was done, Nate and his brother came with their van to help me like pack my stuff so I can move into their house with them. And yeah, they all came, helped me pack, helped me with the bed frame, helped me all of that stuff. I had a storage unit ready for all of those things to just like put that in. And I just remember the whole time she was out and about, like hanging out with Cash, just like roaming around. And at that time, that was also when like we had a different apartment. So we moved apartments during like COVID time and we ended up in like a 2-bedroom flex. So the living room was turned into a bedroom, but the wall had been taken down by that point. So usually there'd be a wall there, but since the wall is no longer there, it's kind of like a bed in the living room. But she's there like hanging out with him and being in the bed the whole time. But when it came down to like the very, very last bag, Nate and his brother were already downstairs in the van and I grabbed the last bag. I gave Cash a hug, told him bye, and she was hiding in her room with the door closed. I went to knock on her door to say bye. Like in my head, I was like, okay, we're not going to be friends anymore. We're really not going to speak after this anymore. Like it's what's done is done. But at least like say a cordial bye, like we've known each other for over 11 years, like at least something like that. But no, instead I just hear a very cold bye from inside the room, her room. So I'm just like, all right. And I grab my bag and I walk out of the apartment. And I really don't know why I did this, but I like heard like a little voice kind of whisper to me and tell me to just stand there right in front of the door. Just stand there and be quiet and don't say anything. So that's what I did. It was like, it felt like forever, but it was probably like a minute later. I hear her door open and I hear her like walking towards the bed. And all I hear is her like basically jump on the bed, kind of woohooing, like cheering that I'm gone. And I just remember standing there being absolutely heartbroken and just like having this huge frog in my throat and being like, after years of being friends, this is what you do. Like you open the door and you jump on his bed and you're cheering my departure. Like after everything that you've put me through, after all of it, that's your reaction. That's your reaction. And it was, I just remember just crying my eyes out and going into the elevator and just like going all the way down to where the van was parked and just going into the car and like collapsing, crying. And like both Nate and his brother are looking at me like, what the hell just happened? And I'm just bawling my eyes out in the van. And that is honestly the end of that story of what happened. Honestly, the title needs to be the best friend from hell or the roommate from hell or whatever it was, because it was the worst experience I've ever experienced in my life. I don't wish it on anyone. After a few years of experiencing that, and I think like a year and a half later, I was still in shambles and I didn't understand why I was still suffering from how this girl treated me. I would go to certain places and I would get panic attacks because it would remind me of like her or something that happened, or I'd go to the supermarket and it'd be like something that she like reminds me of her, and I would have like heart palpitations, and I thought that this was absolutely insane. Like, why am I getting a panic attack and like heart palpitations? My hands are shaking, my hands are sweating, and I'm like having this whole full-blown panic attack because of this person, because of a friend. Like, I didn't understand what was happening to me. And then when I started going to therapy, that's when I started to learn what emotional abuse is and what complex PTSD was and what narcissistic abuse was. And it was like all of these things that I had no idea about that I started to learn about that started like kind of opening my eyes to what I went through and what I was going through at the time. It was very healing having a name for it. Understanding that that particular moment was triangulation and that particular moment was a discard phase and that particular moment was a smear campaign. And like, it was just really nice to put a name to what was happening to me, because the only word I had in my vocabulary to explain it to my therapist was, I'm confused and I'm lost and I don't understand what's happening. And that was the whole thing that was going through my head the entire time, is like this fog of confusion that you can't identify the reality versus how this person is gaslighting you to the point that your reality is skewed. And it is hard to explain that to someone unless you have gone through that abuse cycle to understand what this feeling is and what it means. I know after we were no longer friends, she did like reach out to a few of my mutuals and tell them that it's not her fault that our friendship is over, which I found hilarious, because I'm like, it was definitely your fault that our friendship is over. The way you treated me is unforgivable. It's something that I will never forgive. I will never forget, because you really have to go to some extreme lengths mentally. I don't think she has empathy to go to any lengths emotionally, but to treat someone in that way, that extreme. So like it's behavior, her behavior was unforgivable, absolutely unforgivable. And it's funny how certain mutual friends did not reach out to me to tell me this, that I would hear it from other people. So like, it was also a blessing in disguise, because it made me realize who my real friends were. And anyone that didn't really reach out to me to hear my side of the story, I already knew that they wanted to believe her side of the story, which is completely fine. You can believe whoever you want. It doesn't matter. It also doesn't change what happened to me. She also did reach out to my best friend Larry, because she was annoyed that a few of her mutual friends were sharing my content, like my TikTok stuff, and I guess like whatever I was sharing at that point, that I was like talking about her and they were sharing it to her. And she was like upset because they're asking her questions and they're like really confused about the things that she said, and that apparently I'm ruining her reputation. And honestly, I love Larry for this, because he stood up for me. He had that conversation with her and he's like, well, I think you need to reevaluate your friends and ask yourself why they feel comfortable enough to share that stuff with you if that makes you feel uncomfortable. And on top of that, Sabrina is not sharing your name or tagging you or saying your name in any way, shape, or form. So kind of like saying like, how do you know it's about you unless you know exactly what you did? So if the shoe fits, wear it, Cinderella. So, you know, I feel like you wouldn't feel guilty if you didn't do what you did, because everything I'm saying are things that you did. how you behaved. And if you don't want people to think that you're shitty because of your behavior, then maybe don't behave in a shitty way. But I'm glad he stood up for me. And he also ended up telling her, like, all I really wanted was to have a conversation, a one-on-one conversation to hear her side of the story, me share my side of the story. That's all I wanted. Like, again, didn't have to be friends, didn't have to be like anything. Like, you could apologize for your side of the story, hold yourself accountable. I can apologize for my side of the story and all the stuff that I did. But she would always say, yeah, I'll have a conversation when I'm ready. And I haven't heard from her in a long time. And honestly, that conversation's dead to me. There's no point in having a conversation with her anymore. What happened happened. The way she treated me was the way she treated me, the way she felt about me. And I had to come to grips with that. Was it a hard way to come to grips with it? Was it like very difficult, very painful? Absolutely. But she shattered me to a point where I was nobody. I was broken pieces of glass on the floor, and I had to figure out a way on my own to glue myself back together. And I may be a mosaic of myself, but I try my best to like heal those pieces and get them to be whole again. But it's gonna take a long, long time because there's thousands of pieces that still need healing. But honestly, the biggest portion of this healing journey was sharing everything that I learned with you guys, whether on this podcast or on TikTok, because I really went into it not really thinking much, kind of using it as a video diary. Nobody was really on there. I didn't think anyone would ever find me or listen to my videos. I also didn't think that anyone was going to like say anything to me about it besides like, oh, it's just a friend, get over it. I didn't think friendship breakups were a thing. I thought it was just like me. I had my own, this was my own experience. And this is like a rare experience, but apparently a lot of you have related to it and a lot of you have gone through similar experiences. And honestly, sharing it on TikTok and having so many people reach out to me and let me know that I'm not alone has healed me more than anything. It's just one of those things that, you know, the way you treat people really impacts them for a very long time, and it sticks to them. It sticks to their heart and sticks to their soul and sticks to like their day-to-day lives. And the way she treated me and the way like that impacted me as a person really, really kind of just put me in a destructive place for a while. And I just didn't want to become that person that was hurt, that continues to hurt people. So I had to figure out a way where I could still like share my experience and my pain and talk about it, but in a positive manner where people would kind of relate to it and, you know, feel like they're also heard, because I felt like I was just standing at the top of a hill screaming at the top of my lungs and no one was listening to me because like I felt like no one was gonna believe me anyway. She had such an incredible like image that she had curated and created in front of everybody. Like, I was fooled for many years. She seemed like the nicest, sweetest person, like ditzy, and like you would never think that she would hurt a fly. You'd think she's like the sweetest person ever. But it was a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation. Like, she was sweet on the outside to people and that didn't really know her or only knew her on the surface level. But what I experienced was an absolute monster. And it's insane to like feel that. It's insane to think that. It's insane to have experienced that and to still be standing here today and still have a voice and not, honestly, not have like a mental breakdown every single day. But honestly, if someone would ask me, would you go through it all over again, as horrible as that experience was, I would say yes. I would go through it all over again because I am proud of who I am today. Like, I love who I am today, and I would never change who I am today for anyone, for anything. The woman that I have grown up to be, the voice that I have, the strength that I have, like, I wouldn't change that. And it's, and I'm not thanking her for putting me through that. I don't think anyone that puts someone through that should be thanked for anything. I want to, honestly, like, I made a choice to walk through hell and to walk out as unscathed as possible. I made a choice. Like, every day is a difficult choice. It's a choice every day to be kind and to be respectful, because you never know what someone else is going through. And it's one of those things that sometimes you can look at someone and they're smiling in your face, because everyone tells me how happy I am and how much of a big smile I have, but you don't know what I went through. And there's a reason there's a big smile on my face, because I know what hell feels like, and I know what it feels like to be crying almost every day. And that girl made me cry for quite a long time. And I don't wish that on anyone. I don't wish that pain on anyone. So every day I make a choice to stand strong and to smile and to make sure that I can share a story so that other people can relate and to understand where my pain comes from, but also where my passion and my power comes from, because it's not easy to stand here alone. And honestly, even if no one believed what I went through, I don't care, because I still went through it. And I am still going to be stronger than ever every single day, because I know who I am now, and I know what I deserve and what I require. And I know people like that, they don't deserve to be in my life. So it is a painful lesson that I had to learn, but it was the most beautiful blessing that I had to go through, because God damn, did that girl not deserve me as a friend. And I wish her a life that she absolutely deserves.